1-800-958-2677. That's 1-800-958-2677.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay on a beautiful sunny afternoon, bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And certainly this afternoon we have with us Paul Collins, and he and his brother, Philip, actually do a lot of writing on esoteric subjects. And so I had talked to a gentleman who runs a file called the Illuminati file, I think it is, Illuminati Net, and he had suggested we get the Collins brothers on, who we've had in the past on some of our programs. But we really need to understand that there really are secret societies out there. They're not one, there are many of them. The Illuminati was simply one, but it was a very real organization that played a very important part, not only in the French Revolution, but in the revolutions that followed, and an organization that carried on the tradition of the ancient mysteries, which, of course, are personified in the Kabbalah, the Gnosticism, the Templars, the Rosicrucians, the modern-day Masonry, and, of course, and now in something called The Secret, which is sweeping America. And so many good people are fascinated, because it was recently featured on Oprah Winfrey and Larry King. And Oprah said, this is how, you know, the most important message we can give you. And it is an important message, but it's one main message to hell. Well, that is the background. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you give us a little background of yourself for our listeners who don't know who you are and don't get a chance to read your articles, and then let's let you talk about the esoteric societies and why they're important today.
Okay. Well, I've studied suppressed history and the shadowy undercurrents of world political dynamics for, I'd say, roughly more than 11 years now. I have a degree in Associates of Arts and Science degree. I also have a bachelor's degree with a major in liberal studies and a minor in political science. I've written a book that's entitled The Hidden Face of Terrorism, The Dark Side of Social Engineering from Antiquity to September 11th, and that was published in 2002. And Philip and myself have also written another book called The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, and we have out a new edition of that that came out just last year through Book Surge Publishing. The secret societies that we deal with throughout history usually have acted as conduits for elitist interest, and that's why we should be so concerned about these societies, because they provide the power elite with something that they need, secrecy. And in the case of the Order of the Illuminati, the story is the same. We see the elite dynasty, the Rothschilds, getting involved with the order around 1782. But before I go that far, I think that I better start off with a primer, just a little bit of background information on the order. The Order of the Illuminati was founded on May 1st, 1776 by Adam Weishaupt, and he was professor of canon law at the University of Ingolstadt. And the order's express aim was to destabilize and overturn all civil government and the abolition of Christianity. And ironically, the order worked for the abolition of Christianity using the banner of worldwide Christian unity. Several good people were attracted to the Illuminist cause, and they were lured in unwittingly by this cover. And the order became immensely popular. Its registers had no less than 2,000 names upon them. The Illuminated Lodges were established in France and Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Sweden, Poland, Hungary, Italy.
We're going to have to hold the thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment here at Genesis.
Hey, ladies, if you love to shop, then visit HerbalHealer.com to browse through their online catalog. You'll find thousands of effective, alternative, and natural products for you and the whole family. Besides the amazing products you'll find, this shopping is guilt-free because you're investing in your health, and your health is priceless. While online, sign up to receive the Herbal Healer newsletter, which will keep you informed on the latest and greatest products in education. Did you know that Herbal Healer offers not only natural medicine, but also tension-relieving herbal teas, cookbooks, aromatherapy, products for pampering, and more great products to help you soothe and relax after a long day. Want to learn more for yourself and to help others in the future? Join the Herbal Healer Correspondence Program. You can work at your own pace from the comfort of your own home. This accredited, exciting program can help you gain skills and knowledge. Can you believe you can find all this at one stop? HerbalHealer.com, celebrating 18 years of dedication.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps' potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that diseased organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
Here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is Paul Collins. We're talking about what led up to the formation of the Illuminati. And you have to understand, in those days, there was a royalty. There were kings who ruled over the lands, and some of them were very enlightened, and you had a stable, prosperous society as a whole. Certainly you had some people who were poor and some people who were rich. And it was an unjust society because, of course, the right of the kings to rule was validated by the church. And then the right of the church to control the religious life of the people was validated by the monarchies, by the kings. And so you had this symbiotic relationship. And men looked at it and said, this isn't fair. Men should really have the right to be free. And it was this idea of freedom at that time, which, of course, captured the imagination of many people. And so they decided that they would band together in groups and overthrow the existing social order. But what they did not understand, that this whole idea of the Enlightenment and this idea of the pursuit of freedom, that it began with Locke and then spread to people like Rousseau and Voltaire, was not the major driving force behind this move to change society. It was really an occult belief, and as James H. Billington said so well in his book, fire in the minds of men. And remember, Billington was the head of the Smithsonian and then became the Librarian of Congress, where he works today. And he certainly is a member of the CFR. He understands how this all fits together. And so in his book, he doesn't tell you the whole story, but at least he reveals enough about the occult, esoteric societies and how they certainly were behind this movement, which became the Illuminati and spread into Masonry. The book is well worth our reading because, as he points out, the world revolution began certainly with the first American Revolution, the French Revolution, and it continued right up until 1959, and that is the other revolution in Cuba. Of course, his book ends in 1980, but I'm sure if he were writing it today, he would point out that it's continuing with the revolutions that are taking place in the Middle East and in Nepal and in Thailand. And this is all part of this continuing revolution, but the force behind it is not a desire for individual freedom, but a cult desire, a desire of secret societies to transform the world. So you pick up the story there. And if you disagree with any of what I said, please let us know. You feel free. You don't have to agree.
Okay. Well, sure. Like you said, there was a lot of discontent back then, and Weishaupt decided that he was going to exploit that discontent. And the serious problems with just the lack of equality. And but what he did was he presented this plan, which appeared that it would be a dictatorship of the proletariat, when in fact it was a dictatorship of an oligarchy or an elite, hiding, masking itself as a dictatorship of the proletariat. And the same holds true with communism, which is following in the Illuminist tradition. But Weishaupt's Illuminati was firmly established as a Masonic organization in about 1782 at a Masonic Congress that was held in Wilhelmsbad. Weishaupt himself had joined the Masonic Lodge, Theodore of Good Counsel, in about 1771. He used Masonry as a recruitment ground. Hello?
Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. The reason he was able to accomplish this was because of a myth that was circulating around Masonic circles. There was this myth that held that the hidden masters of Masonry were actually watching the progress of lower-level Masons and could manifest themselves to those Masons who they found to be worthy. And Weishaupt merely presented himself as one of the of Masonry's hidden masters. But things began to take a turn for the worse for the order in about 1783, when the Bavarian Court of the Inquiry began investigating the Illuminist, and then in about 1786 the group was suppressed. The event that led to this suppression was the death of a member of the order, an evangelist preacher named Lanz, and Lanz was on a mission to Cilicia when he was struck by lightning, and instructions were found on his body, and a raid was conducted on the house of two members of the order, and Weishaupt was banished. The group's documents were published, and the Illuminati ceased to exist as a coherent organization. But the fleeing Illuminist disciples spread all over Europe, and they began spreading Illuminism with them. And this led to other manifestations of Illuminism, such as the Reading Societies in Germany, that basically sought to gain a monopoly over all literature. They wanted to take over all writing, reviewing, publishing, all distribution. If successful, the Reading Societies would have become the sole publishing organs in Europe. We know that fleeing Illuminists would also indoctrinate new converts, neo-Illuminists, if you will. These remnants would more or less coalesce into the socialist revolutionary movement. One revolutionary influence upon Karl Marx, for instance, was François Noël Babeuf, and in 1795, Babeuf had published a work which would lay the foundation for Marx's Communist Manifesto, and it was entitled the Plebeian Manifesto. And basically, Babeuf outlined a conspiracy with a circle of adherents that would advance by degrees and work to transform all of society. And this secret hierarchical organization was just like the Illuminist model. And we also know that Marx had been hired by the League of the Just to write his manifesto to mobilize unwitting foot soldiers behind the cause.
Now, of course, there's a great deal to suggest that the League of the Just was simply another branch of this whole esoteric movement at that time. And, of course, who was his closest friend, Marx's closest friend? Why, Frederick Engels, the son of a capitalist. And, of course, I mean, here you have the son of a capitalist helping to finance the man who's writing the Communist Manifesto to take the money away from the wicked capitalists. It should be pretty obvious that this was all phony. It had nothing to do with a redistribution of the wealth. It had to do with overthrowing the existing social structure and bringing a new group of oligarchy to power. But now, of course, these men would be energized by a different force, not Christianity, as had been true in the past, but by this other religion.
That's correct.
Go right ahead.
Oh, sure. Well, the League of the Just, as you suggested, it was an outgrowth of another group. It was outgrowth of the League of the Outlaws. And while preparing the Outlaws' organizational structure, the group's leader, a man named Theodore Schuster, lifted many concepts from Buonarroti's Final Fantasy of a Universal Democratic Carbonary. And another member of the Outlaws, Johann Hoekerig, was a protege of Buonarroti. And Buonarroti had lifted his organizational plan from the Bavarian Illuminist. He also drew ideas from the Illuminist Mirabeau. And one of his closest collaborators, Giacchino Prati, connected Buonarroti to Illuminism when he stated that Buonarroti's first revolutionary organization, a group called the Sublime Perfect Masters, was instituted during the first French Revolution. And we also know that Buonarroti lifted the Illuminist idea of recovering a natural religion that was practiced in past sects of Illuminism, supposedly, and made it a part of his revolutionary plan. Now, there has been some argument as to whether there are any direct descendants of the Illuminati, and even if there are not, Illuminism is still important to look at because we could be experiencing what my good friend Terry Melanson at conspiracyarchive.com refers to as the posthumous influence of the Illuminati. And let me explain what I mean by that statement. The modern-day power elite practice what Professor Peter Dale Scott refers to as deep politics. Deep politics is the sum total of the criminal, covert, and subversive activities that make up the everyday business of the power elite and the deep political system. The deep political system is basically those factions of the government that have been prostituted out to the elite. Bill Moyers confirmed that the modern-day elites practice deep politics on a 1980 broadcast of his show, The Bill Moyers Journal, commenting on warnings of David Rockefeller's detractors. Moyers stated, quote, "What some critics see as a vast international conspiracy, he being Rockefeller, considers a circumstance of life and just another day's work," unquote. The Illuminati is the group that was responsible for systematizing the means and the methods that constitute deep politics. To do this, Weishaupt would adopt concepts from the Jesuits. Now, Weishaupt was himself a defrocked Jesuit. The Illuminists were simultaneously seeking to imitate and destroy the Jesuits. Now, let me clarify something before I go any further. Some pseudo-researchers have misconstrued the Jesuit influence to satisfy their own anti-Catholic biases and to promote this idea of a monolithic conspiracy that's headquartered in the Vatican. One proponent of this idea is Eric John Phelps. His book, Vatican Assassins, has the form of research but none of the substance. The substance is instead religious bigotry of a anti-Catholic flavor and appeals to the subrational. I say this as a non-Catholic, by the way. The conspiracy that we face is largely a conspiracy of ideas. Jesuits are important because of their contribution to the ideational continuum. In other words, they helped manufacture the ideational contagion that motivates the modern-day power elite. So let me explain the Jesuit link. One of the symbols that comprised the luminous iconography was the truncated pyramid crowned by the all-seeing eye. What is semiotically communicated through that symbol is the theme of a panoptic society. A panoptic society is a system of control maintained through the perpetual surveillance of all the citizenry. Pan means all, optic means seeing.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Paul Collins, talking about the master conspiracy. Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you, and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Hello, Ted Anderson. Listeners of the network are familiar with the Federal Reserve Note and understand the risks of deficit spending. Therefore, with catastrophic events, it comes as no surprise that some banks have currently placed limits on the amount of cash depositors can remove from their accounts. A fractional reserve system means only a small portion of your deposit is held in reserve for immediate withdrawal. Deficit spending will skyrocket through FDIC if the government is forced to insure deposits during a bank run followed by a depressed economy. A current effort is underway by the Fed, along with other central banks, to increase liquidity for depositors. However, an increase in money supply without equal expansion in productivity can cause inflation. In order to achieve strength and stability, I recommend a conservative portion of all investments to be calmly repositioned into gold and silver. While paper investments currently have been driven by debt, gold on its own has held value for over 6,000 years. For more information, call 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Well, I guess it's Paul Collins. He's talking really about The background, this whole revolutionary movement, and he's throwing out words like Buonarroti and Babouf, and these are names which are little known to the average individual, but they were an important part of the secret societies that existed following the French Revolution. And there were a myriad of them. Certainly the Society of the Just was simply one, and they were the ones, of course, who financed Karl Marx. Karl Marx didn't just sit down and write the Communist Manifesto. He was paid to do it. There were people who wanted an inspiring, revolutionary manifesto so they could overthrow the existing social order so they could take control. And, of course, we had in Italy the Carbonari. Here in the United States, we had similar occult organizations. And, of course, following the publication of the Communist Manifesto, we had communists. Communist cells organized all throughout the world. It was part of this world revolutionary movement. There is a world revolutionary movement, which most people think, misguidedly, has its origin in the Enlightenment, certainly, and in the writings of, as we said earlier, Rousseau and of Voltaire. And that is, of course, what you're supposed to think. But the truth of the matter is, this all really is founded in the occult. So, in these secret societies, where these people have a different perception of God. So, go ahead and pick the story up there, Paul.
Sure. Well, as I said before the break, one of the symbols that comprised the Illuminist iconography was the truncated pyramid crowned by the all-seeing eye, and what that semiotically is communicating to people is the idea, the theme of a panoptic society. And a panoptic society is a system of control maintained through the perpetual surveillance of the citizenry. Pan means all, optic means seeing, so it's an all-seeing system. The system of panoptic control within Adam Weishaupt's Illuminati was an adaptation of earlier Jesuit systems. According to the deceased philosopher Michel Foucault, the model colleges of the Jesuits employed panopticism, and panopticism is a method of hierarchical observation designed specifically for the maintenance of a disciplinary power over subjects. The regulatory schema of panopticism is derived from Jeremy Bentham's Panopticon, a theoretical model for a prison where the inmate is perpetually cognizant of the ubiquitous gaze of others. This all-pervading normalizing gaze would impose a state of consciousness and permanent visibility that assures the automatic functioning of power. Thus, the inmate becomes effectively and efficiently self-policing. They become their own police ward, if you will. In the words of Foucault, the inmate, quote, becomes the principal of his own subjection, unquote. Working with the Benthamite physics of power, the Jesuit model colleges were able to promote compliance and conformity among their students. However, the panoptic schema would not remain confined to the model colleges of the Jesuits. According to Foucault, the panoptic schema held polyvalent applications and thus constituted a much more general modality of power. Adam Weishaupt, who, as I stated before, was a former Jesuit himself, may have recognized the polyvalence of Bentham's prison model. Weishaupt developed his own method of hierarchical observation called ceiling spionage, which means spying on the soul. And ceiling spionage involved the close observation of Illuminist adepts. And through such observation, Weishaupt believed that the Illuminist hierarchy could gain access to the soul of its operatives. Astute listeners will recognize Weishaupt's ceiling spionage as a precursor to B.F. Skinner's behaviorism. They'll also recognize it as a precursor to many of the psychoanalytical ideas of Freud. Like Weishaupt's system of behavioral observation and modification, Skinner's behaviorism was premised upon the physicalist assumption that all observable behavior provided the only adequate indicator of mental states. In fact, Skinner's reductionist metaphysics virtually obliterated the mental state, transforming it into a proverbial mirage and imposed upon observable behavior by the percipient. So, in other words, psyche was taken out of psychology, if we understand that psyche is soul. So, from Skinner's perspective, man was merely an amalgam of behavioral repertoires that could be manipulated and controlled. And it comes as little surprise that Skinner believed that the system of communism practiced in Red China presented a societal model that America should emulate.
You're going to have to hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Genesis.
Order a copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645. Hey folks, Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used pure soap? I mean the hard-to-find kind that's all natural and not full of corrosive toxins and chemicals and detergents that just dry out your skin and have been connected to very serious health problems. Let me tell you something about the Calbin Pure Soap Company. There's a 100% unconditional guarantee on all their wonderful products. They're all natural, they're triple concentrated, they're factory direct, factory owned, and operated since 1947. Earth-friendly pure soaps for bathing, laundry, and kitchen. Try Pure Soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else. Now for the first time, Calbin Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbin Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calbinpuresoap.com.
The Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091.
Paul, would you like to get your webpage out there? Any information about what you and your brother do, where they can get your books, things of that sort?
Sure, sure. The book, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, can be picked up at Amazon.com, and people are going to want to get the 2006 edition put out by Book Surge, not the 2003-2004 edition, because the new edition is revised and expanded upon. It's twice the size of the first one, and they can also get The Hidden Face of Terrorism there as well. They can also pick up an ebook version of The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship through Michael Corbin's website for a closer look, www.4aclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclosereclos David Guyatt's book, The Masters of Persuasion, which makes for an excellent companion along with that book. They can also see a complete collection of our essays and writings at www.conspiracyarchive.com. Just go there, click on the commentary section, and you'll find our names there, and you'll find the articles there. And we are also we also just recently had a column go up called A Glass Darkly at Raiders News Update, which is Tom Horn's website. Just go to www.raidersnewsupdate.com, and he's starting to put a lot of our articles up there as well. So yeah, that's where people can find the bulk of our research.
All right, fine. So basically, so we've been talking about what really motivated these people who were so intent upon changing the world, and we're talking certainly about the 19th century. But then out of these revolutionary movements of the 19th century came this worldwide revolutionary movement we refer to as communism, which is simply a tangible, you know, reflection of this world revolution, which most people think has its roots in atheism and humanism and the Enlightenment, and of course that's the lie. I mean, it's really founded in the occult and in the secret societies of the previous two centuries. But this is never discussed, this is never taught in our schools, because you're not supposed to believe in secret societies. You're not supposed to believe in the fact that there really are people who worship a different god. You're not supposed to understand that really behind everything going on today is a conspiracy against the God of the Bible. So pick up the story there, Paul.
Sure. Well, the Illuminist system of social control would provide the operational protocol for every totalitarian regime throughout the 20th century. Communism, fascism, and other forms of oligarchical governance have employed some variation of Weishaupt's panopticism. Ultimately, the goal has always been what Weishaupt called the Maschinenmenschen, a completely mechanized man. Now, the view of man as analogous to a machine was a central characteristic to the Enlightenment. I do believe that the Enlightenment was involved to an extent, but I believe, as Klaus Epstein pointed out in his book, The Genesis of German Conservatism, that there was an above-ground Enlightenment, and then there was an obscurantism, there was an obscurantist subversive level to the Enlightenment, and that level actually entertains some German occultism. So we do see some Enlightenment ideas involved. During the period of the Enlightenment, several theoreticians would systematize the concepts and principles of technocratic governance. Technocratic governance, or technocracy, is a government system where scientists and technicians act as the sole decision-making body. This inherently democratic concept originated within esoteric circles. Sir Francis Bacon developed the original model for technocracy in his book, The New Atlantis. It was published in 1627, and The New Atlantis was adorned with symbols of occult Freemasonry and presented the Rosicrucian mandate for the formation of an invisible college. Bacon himself was a member of the Secret Order of the Helmet, and some allege a grandmaster of the Secret Rosicrucian Order. The utopia presented by Bacon in The New Atlantis was a pure technocratic society. The philosopher kings of Plato's Republic were to be replaced by a technical elite. Scientists and technicians would circumvent conflicting political interests, giving rise to an apolitical bureaucracy. The Baconian concept of a new Atlantis would provide the groundwork for the technocratic ideas of Henri de Saint-Simon, an Enlightenment thinker and the mentor of Auguste Comte, and variations of Bacon's technocratic philosophy also circulated within Freemasonry, which would gradually be co-opted by Weishaupt's Illuminati.
Good, Adam, for our listeners out there, they have to understand what this idea of technocracy is. It is a ruling group of bureaucrats who will control us common people because we're not smart enough to control ourselves. In other words, there will be no freedom, Everything will be regulated by the bureaucrats, or they refer to themselves as technocrats. Now, you'll remember, of course, it was in 1970 that Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote one of the most important books of the last century. It was called, Between Two Ages, America in the Technotronic Age. Between Two Ages, in other words, the old age and the new age of the technocracy. It was because of that book that David Rockefeller picked Zbigniew Brzezinski to form the Trilateral Commission, and you remember what their logo was, or and still is to this day. Three sixes joined together in the middle by an upside-down cross. So they understood, of course, the spiritual component of all of this, but I suspect that there are very, very few of the people who embrace this idea. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could create utopia with a group of bureaucrats running everything? And, of course, we'll be those bureaucrats. And the common people will love us because we're taking care of them. We're providing for their health and education and welfare and well-being. But you see the end result in the gulag in Russia and the gulag in China today. And the total destruction of the very souls of men, that's what it's about. Crush the opposition, the bureaucracy or the technocracy knows best. So pick that story up because I think it's so important people understand these terms that you use.
Sure.
Because
sure.
They're seminal to our discussion.
Sure. Well, just to add a little bit to that, Carol Quigley, who could be pretty much characterized as an archival curator for the power elite, predicted it as well when he said in his book, nearing the end of that book, Tragedy and Hope, that the democratic voter would be replaced by the expert. Anyways, technocracy is premised upon the religion of scientism, which contends that the investigational methods of the physical sciences should be universally imposed upon all fields of inquiry. Now, of course, such an ecumenical imposition would demolish concepts like liberty and human dignity. As a system of quantification, science must concern itself primarily with quantifiable entities. That which cannot be measured must be disregarded, and because human dignity and liberty defy quantification, these concepts are typically jettisoned by scientific epistemologies. A technocracy, which is a purely scientific society, eschews these concepts as well. Thus, technocratic governance strives to breed a man that is, in the words of B.F. Skinner, beyond freedom and dignity. The Illuminati, which was partially a product of the Enlightenment, at least the obscurantist subversive wing of the Enlightenment, strove to do the same. This fact is demonstrated through Weishaupt's promotion of a clockwork society populated by the machine invention, the machine man. The scientific interpretation of society is accompanied by an equally scientific interpretation of religion. After all, religion has often acted as a cohesive element within societies, and it's galvanized the citizenry through shared beliefs and practices. While the Enlightenment sought to undermine traditional religions, it simultaneously proffered an anthropocentric religion of its own. Saint Simone, for instance, advocated what he called the New Christianity, and this scientific faith presented morality without metaphysics and technology without theology. Likewise, the Illuminati reconceptualized Jesus, portraying him as a Gnostic adept and a technocratic prophet. I suspect that something similar is going to happen this Sunday when the Discovery Channel airs its Tomb of Jesus special. In accordance with their strident scientific materialism, Weishaupt and his fellow Illuminists presented a Christ that was bereft of any supernatural qualities, kind of like the cessationist strand of Christianity today that treats miracles as a bygone product and basically says that we're not supposed to desire the gifts of the Spirit anymore. The Illuminist Christ was a technocratic avatar that preached a Gnostic gospel of self-salvation, And this doctrine of self-salvation held aloft human reason as the new incarnation of revelatory knowledge, a scientific version of gnosis, so to speak. According to Weishaupt, Jesus was the assertor of the empire of reason. And in this Illuminist context, the salvation offered by Christ was actually a hidden knowledge that promised to unlock the cognitive powers of man. And in turn, these powers would facilitate man's apotheosis, or his godhood. Such conscious tampering with traditional doctrine constitutes what the sociologist William Sims Bainbridge, who studied the Process Church of Final Judgment, what he calls the calls religious engineering. Religious engineering is the conscious, systematic, skilled creation of a new religion. Typically, the religion that is designed affirms the socially and politically expedient contentions of those engineering it. For instance, the Process Church, which was a satanic cult that Bainbridge conducted a five-year ethnographic study with, engineered a religion that suited its Hegelian Weltanschauung, its Hegelian worldview, and hedonistic practices. Bainbridge considers religious engineering instrumental to human progress and encourages sociologists to actively experiment with scientific cults, using them as a petri dish, particularly UFO cults. Not surprisingly, several UFO cults proffer an exotheological Christ. Like the Illuminist Christ, the exotheological Christ is bereft of any supernatural qualities. Instead of spiritual salvation, the redemption is offered by the redemption that's offered by this scientistic Messiah is basically the restoration of humanity's purported intrinsic divinity and the apotheosis of man. But Bainbridge's mandate for sociologists to become religious engineers merely reiterates the Comtean concept of a sociocracy, an anthropocentric religion that portrayed man as a gradually evolving deity. Auguste Comte, who was the protege of Honoré de Saint-Simon, promoted a religion of humanity that was actively shaped and promulgated by social scientists. And this new scientistic theocracy would inculcate the people into its technocratic evangel through a series of rituals and festivals, dubbed sociolatry. This litany of devotional practices venerated humanity, which Comte viewed as an emergent deity being incarnated through the great men of history. Such doctrines of emergent deity are nothing new. Nietzsche had it, the Übermensch, Hegel's Weltgeist, H.G. Wells' Racial Mind, and the Freemasonic Great Architect are all cases in point of the emergent deity.
But I think what's so important is that what they were really thinking was that man could perfect himself.
That's correct. This doctrine of emergent deity remained embedded within sociology, which is evidenced by the monistic theories of Herbert Spencer and Emil Durkheim.
But let's bring this down to something our listeners may be able to associate with. And certainly you mentioned the Process Church of the Latter Judgment. And this was actually had a very profound impact on America during the 719 period of 1970s, when, of course, we saw one of the branches of the Process Church had a cell in New York City. And it's probably its most famous member was a man named David Berkowitz, the son of Sam Keller, who, of course, was part of a satanic cult that was just going around killing people. And the fact that it was well known that he was only one of a number of killers in this series of serial killings, and yet there was such control over the police force in that region in New York, why they were never allowed. There were people who wanted to investigate the rest of this cult, but they were never allowed to. Manson was indirectly related to the Process Church, so these ideas are not simply theoretical ideas. They have an impact on human beings today, because there really are these satanic cults working within our society, the Process Church being simply one of a myriad of them. Would you agree or disagree?
I would absolutely agree there. Let me tie that into this discussion, actually. Berkowitz claimed to have been to Roy Cohn's Connecticut home. And he claimed that the Process Church was basically providing drugs for sex soirees that were going on at Roy Cohn's home. And I believe that that was basically part of Roy Cohn's sexual blackmail operation, which Edwin Wilson's sexual blackmail operation would be a continuation of, and which I believe Jack Abramoff was running a continuation of as well. Roy Cohn was practicing deep politics, which, as I explained earlier on in the discussion, deep politics, the means and the methods for deep politics was systematized by the Illuminati, and sexual blackmail operations is a cornerstone of deep political practices. We've seen it with the Illuminists, and we've seen it with Roy Cohn. And as I said, Berkowitz actually witnessed these parties going on. He got to meet Roy Cohn, and the cult that he was a part of, which was the result of religious engineering, the Process Church, was providing drugs for these parties. And basically the people would show up at these parties, very influential people high up in society, political figures would show up, they'd be compromised.
We're out of time, Paul. We just began to scratch the surface. Fascinating presentation. I hope people will go to your webpage, get your material, begin to see how this all ties together into this universal conspiracy against God that's being so successful today. Bye-bye. God bless. Thanks very much.
American Discount Home Medical Equipment sells at discount prices. We sell wheelchairs, oxygen equipment, hospital beds, commodes, bath safety products, walkers, and other items needed for the care of your loved one at home. Our phone number is 1-800-956-6616. We sell at one-half of retail price or less. We have free shipping and no sales tax for any shipment outside of California. You can expect to receive the item within 7 days. Our website address is www.home-med-equip.com. Again, our phone number is 1-800-956-6616.
Morning, honey. Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water, so I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin. And wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a Travel Berkey today for only $209, or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
Hey, Emily. Wow, you look great.
I feel great. I've been using MetaCleanse Colon Cleanse.
Really? What is it? How does it work?
MetaCleanse is a natural fiber therapy with ground flaxseed, psyllium, and bentonite clay that eliminates toxins from your body. MetaCleanse is easy to use without being intrusive. You take 2 tablespoons of MetaCleanse powder, mix with water or juice, drink, and it does all the work for you.
That's it? Well, it sounds so easy and convenient.
It is easy. Plus, the FDA says flaxseed works to prevent cancer, and helps with menopause, weight loss, irritable bowel syndrome, and constipation.
It helps with all of those ailments? That's amazing.
And the bentonite clay and MetaCleanse eliminates viruses and pesticides in the intestinal tract.
Wow, Where can I buy MetaCleanse?
A one-month supply is available online at MetaCleanse.com. That's MetaCleanse.com. For only $26.90, MetaCleanse is shipped directly to you. Or call 1-800-317-9547. That's 800-317-9547.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and I realize that what you just heard was very, very complicated, but really very profound. Let me suggest, to really understand how this ties together, you should read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, Professor Quigley's book, and remember, Professor Quigley was Bill Clinton's mentor, and he had actually had the opportunity to investigate these secret societies, to go through the secret records. He tells you on that on page 950 or 952 of his book of Tragedy and Hope, which was actively suppressed for many years. We have the book. We have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells how his book was suppressed despite the fact that he identified with these secret societies and with these powerful people who want to remake the world. You can get the four-tape set either as part of our secret government four-tape set or as part of our Tragedy and Hope special, which includes the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, that explains how it is that the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, have been funding communism, for a century here in the United States. And the great joke among themselves is the people in America really think that communism is the enemy. They were never allowed to realize that it was all a facade. The whole idea was to focus your attention on communism while they were centralizing all power in Washington, D.C., and taking away our freedom here at home. So Foundations, Their Power and Influence, Tragedy and Hope. And the interview with Professor Quigley are available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927 or certainly get the Secret Government 4-tape set. Then to really get an overview of how it all fits together, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you can get it by itself or with a DVD or with the audio tape or get them all together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. To really understand how they're poisoning our children and why they're doing it, you need to get the talk. It's called The Planned Population Reduction. It's either DVD But you can also go ahead and get the my population control video. You can get my population control 4-tape set or get the population control special. It'll give you a lot of great information about what's really going on in the world today you won't get elsewhere. If you'd like to know how they're poisoning our children with fluoride, why you need to get the hidden agenda, the talk. And it's available either on the a VHS, or then, of course, there is a syllabus that goes with that. If you want to understand mercury, why we've got a lot on, certainly a great deal now, how they're using the mercury vaccines to destroy the minds of our children. One of the best things we have right now is the talk given by Dr. Ayoub, and it's available in both VHS or in DVD. And then, of course, if you buy that, why, you can specifically request the CD-ROM that goes with it, and it will give you that to you for nothing. And it has actually literally thousands of pages of research on that CD-ROM. So you can get all the documentation, and you realize, of course, the government is intentionally lying to you. They're poisoning your children. They know what they're doing. Now, it's not the whole government. It's just a very small group of people at the CDC and at the NIH. But the trouble is so many good people go along because you don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to lose your job. And we know that they know because we actually have a copy of the secret meeting that they held in Georgia where the leaders of the CDC and the NIH and the World Health Organization and the vaccine manufacturers and a number of outside people met there for several days in Georgia to go over all the data. And they determined that the mercury-filled vaccines were responsible for autism and the spectrum of neurodevelopmental abnormalities that's plaguing almost every child in America. But don't you worry, they've taken most of the mercury out of our childhood vaccines. They still have it in vaccines, so they give to children and pregnant women. But we've left it in for those little black children all throughout the world because, of course, we love them so much, We won't, of course, give them the mercury that'll destroy their minds. We're dealing with organized evil. Our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
Terrorism. Terrorism. Chemical attacks.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this afternoon they happen to be the views of our guest, Mr. Carl Tykrib, who, of course, we've never met personally, but we feel we know. We've talked too many times on our program, and he writes articles dealing with many of the same subjects that we do. Of course, he doesn't live in quite as nice as place as we do. He lives up there in the snowy Canada. How are things up there, Carl?
Actually, doing not too bad, Dr. Monteith.
Well,
we've had 4 days now of nonstop heavy snow, blizzard conditions, but at least the temperatures are fairly decent. None of the minus 30, minus 40 type of temperatures that we had 2 weeks ago.
All right, fine. Well, I'm glad that you're able to be with us. Last time I talked to you, I guess I talked to your wife while you just skied down the hill on your face, and you weren't feeling too well.
Well, for that I have to apologize. I took a pretty hard tumble. I guess I knocked myself completely out, suffered a pretty severe concussion. Went skiing still for another maybe half hour after that. My stomach just felt like it was in topsy-turvy. And then ended up driving about an hour and a half, 2 hours home. And, of course, the following day I'm supposed to do my interview with you. But I was basically incoherent. It would have been a career-ending interview because I was saying the same things over and over again. And I could hardly move my jaw when I did talk because from what I understand, I must have smashed the side of my face pretty hard and bruised everything from the temple area right down to the side of my jaw and down to my neck.
Well, I'm glad you're doing better. And know anytime we always understand that things can come up where you can't do the program. Well, what is your take on what's going on, and what would you like to talk about today?
Well, you know, since I had our last interview with you, and that was last summer sometime, I've enjoyed going to a few different conferences and taking in a few different events that may be of interest to yourself and to your listeners. And the events I've been a part of have been sponsored by NATO and are examining the future role of NATO and where it will go in the next 3, 5, 10 years, depending, of course, on a lot of the political issues that are happening in different parts of the world. And so there's some interesting stuff that came out of those two conferences, and I just finished attending last week in Winnipeg, Manitoba, a conference on the United Nations Human Rights Council, and some fascinating information that came out of there, primarily through the fact that the host of the event, Lloyd Axworthy, who was a very high-ranking Canadian, political player in the 1990s and very involved in the United Nations, he had brought on board Bill Pace. Bill Pace is the executive director of the World Federalist Movement, which is the largest lobby group for world government. And so there was some very interesting dynamics in these conferences. So probably talk about some of those aspects as we continue our conversation.
All right, fine. Well, that's what we'll do. And, Chris, for our listener out there, you have to understand that the common denominator behind everything going on today, whether it's what's going on here with the formation of the North American Union, or whether it's what's going on in the Middle East with the expansion of the war over there, what's happening financially to our country, what's happening spiritually to our country, it all gets around, and you can certainly summarize it in a, they want a new world order and a new world religion. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Carl Tykwer, and we haven't talked to Carl in some time, but we always enjoy what his commentary. He's been attending some meetings of NATO. Now, why does NATO still exist? It was actually formed, of course, to protect the European nations against the wicked communists in Russia. And, of course, that is what you have to tell the American people. What you never tell the American people is that communism has been funded since its very inception by great industrialists and banks, and certainly by our own government, with all sorts of loans, and certainly with the help of Great Britain and a few other nations, but primarily the United States, the major driving force behind creating an enemy, so we could justify, here in the United States, spending more money for our military than all the rest of the nations in the world put together. Why? Because America is to lead the world into the New World Order, the New World Religion. So when supposedly communism dissolved back in 1991, we still had to have NATO. Why do we have to have NATO? Well, because it was going to become, on all intents and purposes, the world army of this New World Organization they're creating. But we can't let the American people know what's really going on. And then Carl has recently attended a meeting where, of course, where the head of the World Federalist Organization attended. And, of course, what's the purpose of World Federalism? Why, to create a one-world government under this same ruling elite. These people of great wealth and great power who have no loyalty to America, but this internationalist dream. Go ahead. You pick up the story, Carl.
Certainly. When you were discussing the idea of NATO as a global police force, ironically, NATO is at this point, and has been for quite some time, ever since really the end of the Cold War, the supposed end of the Cold War, has been looking to see how they could reinvent themselves or how they could justify their existence. And of course, the war on terror, the war on the adjective of terror is one of their primary reasons now for their claimed existence. But Dr. Montes, it was fascinating to listen to these high-ranking NATO personalities as they debated what is the future, what is the direction. And one common theme came out, and this came out at both NATO conferences that I attended. The common theme was very simply this: NATO is to become a global force. They recognize that they can no longer operate solely within the North Atlantic framework.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carl is saying that as he attends these meetings, that where of course they're primarily NATO meetings, and they're trying to say, well, what's the function of NATO? After all, there's no longer a threat from Russian communism, at least for us to believe that. So why do we exist? And then, of course, well, we have to become a global force. And today, NATO, a militarized unit, is North Atlantic Treaty Organization, is to become, for all intents and purposes, what they would like it is to become the world army. Now, most people throughout the world really don't want to invest the money for a world army, but the United States is the major driving force behind NATO, and most of the boys fighting and dying in Afghanistan today under the NATO banner are Americans, and of course some British, but predominantly American boys. And then not only do we have our boys stationed in NATO, we also have them stationed there under the American banner. So, but it's all smoke and mirrors. It is all part of perception. Oh, my goodness, we have to have this world force, this world government, and we have to have this world military, world police, world court, world parliament, world executive, world laws. But it's all about eventually the destruction of America, destruction of nationhood, and molding everything together under the control of this ruling oligarchy. So, Carl, you go ahead now.
The meeting that I attended, one in particular, we had a number of very high-ranking NATO officials, and one of the generals who is operating under the NATO system had basically asked the question, why are we still in existence? And he was particularly interested in how the participants would react and what their reasons were. And he was explaining the role in Afghanistan, and he was explaining it in terms of we were there to promote democracy, and that if you remember before 9/11, Afghanistan was a nation where there was no women's rights, there was no rights of the press, no human rights, etc., etc. And I thought to myself, well, you know, if that's your reason, if that's the overarching goal of why you went, what a sham. Because if that was the situation, why, you should be now parachuting troops into China. You should be parachuting troops into Saudi Arabia. You should be going into all kinds of countries that you never will, because you already have very close ties and economic linkages that you cannot simply jeopardize. And it was an obvious sham. We had one Canadian military officer stand up and in essence denounce it and said, you put the fruit on the low-hanging branches. What do you, in essence, saying, what do you think we are, stupid? There is way more to this than meets the eye, but nobody could give a proper answer.
Well, I thought that we went into Afghanistan because we had to catch the wicked Osama bin Laden who'd attacked the World Trade Center and killed all those Americans, but you know, the most amazing thing is, Carl, that we never tried to get Osama bin Laden. Anybody who's read the stories that came out of there by the people who were there at the time realize that we did not try to get Osama bin Laden. We have statements by high government officials saying we never went there to get Osama bin Laden. If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify the war? Supposedly escaped to Pakistan. Why didn't we go to Pakistan and get him and then bring our troops home? Because we never went into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden. We went there to transform that society, and that's why we went into Iraq, and that's why we're going into Iran, and that's why we're going to take on the whole Muslim world. We're going to transform the world. But that's not what the American people are being told, is it?
No, it's not. The irony to this, especially to the statement made by the one particular general that they were going into to give human rights and bring democracy, the irony of it was that only a few months after this particular meeting, and this particular meeting happened in October of last year, only a few months after, in January of 2007, NATO high delegates were involved in a meeting in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, with the Saudi Minister of Foreign Affairs. And their meeting was to develop a deep integration, a deeper involvement in the Middle East, in the Middle East situation, including the creation of a special working relationship with the Gulf Cooperation Council.
But women don't have any rights there either, and they don't have any freedom of the press in Saudi Arabia, so why aren't we attacking Saudi Arabia?
Well, that's the hypocrisy. So, you know you're being fed a real line of garbage when you have a high-ranking NATO official, and it wouldn't have mattered what his rank was, viewing this verbiage that they're somehow going after Afghanistan's boogeymen because they have taken away rights and freedoms and dignity from women, the press, etc. And then you turn around and you develop a strong working relationship with Saudi Arabia and are looking at getting directly involved. And this is what came out at both meetings. NATO is looking at getting directly involved in the Middle Eastern situation. And this is very significant. I don't think it's hit the news anywhere that I'm aware of. But when you have NATO proclaiming itself as a type of global COP, and that's what these two meetings were more or less about, how do we transform NATO into a global force, and then at the same time discuss the issue of the Middle East and that NATO needs to become directly involved in some way, shape, or form. How it'll play out, I don't know. But now you already have a recipe for disaster in ways that I don't think we can begin to comprehend.
I agree, and I'm very, very concerned the way things are going. And the lack of outcry on the part of so many of the American people about what's happening, other than the radical left. The radical left is concerned, and the conservative Christians are going right along with this, because their ministers are certainly getting stroked and calls from the White House and encouragement to get the Christians to go along with this idea that we're perfectly justified in what we're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we've got to do something about Iran before they attack New York or Washington, D.C. with their nuclear weapons, which they obviously have and or they're trying to make or something or other.
We don't think, do we?
The things we've got to get people to think. We've got to get them to use the good mind that God gave them to begin to understand that we're being lied to, that there's another agenda, what's going on. And behind that other agenda, there is a spiritual agenda. And that, of course, is what most of our commentators miss.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, what we're seeing here is a manipulation of values, behavior, attitudes, beliefs. And we're seeing a subtle manipulation in many, many ways. I'm in the process, in the next couple of weeks, of launching a brand new website called forcingchange.org. It's not up yet. Hopefully be up in a couple of weeks. And we're going to be having, you could say, very detailed monthly analysis of various events and various institutions and agendas. One of the articles in an upcoming issue that we're looking at releasing will be on manipulating the masses. And in essence, it's going to be a penetrating look at psychological operations, almost like a primer on global propaganda. Because really, we don't think anymore. We don't realize that we have been subtly manipulated. We are a sucker for lies. And we really seem to gravitate towards deception. We don't use our mental faculties. And as Christians, we certainly don't use our spiritual faculties to discern right from wrong, truth from error. And you're right, we have the conservative side, the Christian conservative side, that has more or less fallen asleep. And that's really, really pathetic. We have never been called to fall asleep. We've always been called to be watchful, always been called to be vigilant, always been called to stand firm for truth. And the pathetic aspect of North American Christianity, because I have to put Canadian Christianity in there as well, is that we somehow have put the Bible on the shelf, and we have parked our brains alongside of the Bible, and we have just gullibly sat back and now are soaking in everything that we are being told from our pulpits, from our radios, from our televisions, from mass media, and we somehow think that we are knowledgeable and that we know better. It's the new barbarian age, really, where enlightenment is actually just outright stupidity.
Well, of course, the trouble is that people are just not being told the truth. And people are not being explained what's going on and how they know how to actually create and manipulate our emotions. And some of the arguments that are used today, they're like, my goodness, we can't get out of Iraq. We get out of Iraq, the terrorists will follow us home. You know, we're fighting terrorism in Iraq. Well, people have forgotten there was no Al-Qaeda and there was no terrorism in Iraq. Because Saddam Hussein, and we may not like him, he may have been an evil and wicked individual, but he wouldn't allow Al-Qaeda terrorists there. It was only when we destroyed the structure of that society that we set up a situation where they could be a small Al-Qaeda constituent there. And yet if you read the Iraq Study Group report, they estimate that there are 1,300 Al-Qaeda terrorists in Iraq today. 1,300 of them. So we're going to keep 160,000 American troops there, you know, and killing our American boys because of 1,300 Al-Qaeda. And we're actually not, of course, fighting these Islamic terrorists. We're recruiting them people into this. Out of frustration, out of increasing hatred for America, they're turning away from the moderate form of the Islamic faith, which has been so prevalent for centuries, to join this radical Islamic fundamentalist movement, which is being funded by our good friends in Pakistan, by our good friends in Saudi Arabia, and of course, what nobody ever asked is, who's funding Pakistan? Mm-hmm. And I would like to suggest the CIA and our own government gives them about $600 million a year. $8 billion has disappeared in Iraq. $8 billion? Oh, shucks, we have no idea what happened to it. If you don't believe it, go up on the Internet, Google in Iraq, $8 billion. $8 billion has just disappeared. Do you really think they're that incompetent? I don't. I think that they need means of funding this whole Islamic terrorist movement. You have to have an enemy if you're going to rally the people behind you for the next step in this movement towards the New World Order, World War III. Well, Carl, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Sure.
And if you disagree with me on anything I say, you do not have to be a gentleman. You go right ahead and disagree.
I'm a Canadian, and Canadians are supposed to be gentlemen, aren't they?
No, you go right ahead. I mean, because really, people want to hear what you have to say. Sometimes I'll make provocative statements, hoping to draw out your thoughts.
Well, you know, the whole idea here is that hopefully iron can sharpen iron, and that through the discussion between yourself and myself, it will spur people to think, spur people to reflect and to contemplate, and then to be able to go forward and actually do some research and some reading and some hunting on their own to either confirm or to deny what has been said here. And therefore, hopefully, people will, in essence, get off their duff and actually become very involved on a very personal way. One thing I did want to bring up before we got away from the NATO issue is that something to watch for this summer, Dr. Montes. This summer, it's being debated right now within NATO circles. They would like to send a naval contingent for the first time from the Mediterranean around Africa, around South Africa, and back up on the eastern side of the African continent by Madagascar, back north towards Somalia, and then go through the Suez Canal and re-enter the Mediterranean. In other words, a full walk around the block from a naval perspective. And the reason for doing this is that they want to be able to show both the international community and the world at large that NATO has a naval component that is global in reach, that there's really no place on the earth that is outside of their scope or outside of their jurisdiction, that they're going to be able to do this and in essence show a force or symbolic force that the rest of the world will have to take and take notice of.
Well, now, what does NATO have in the way of ships? I mean, certainly we've always assumed that they were a military force, but this would be an army rather than a navy. Do they actually have a NATO navy today, or is this simply made up of constituents from various countries, aircraft carriers or carriers or destroyers that are lent to NATO from other countries?
That's it. Like all other NATO operations, it really is a mixed bag of military hardware, personnel, and units from different nations, different nations and different countries. There is a NATO naval program that's been in operation now for a number of months called Operation Endeavor. They have been patrolling the Mediterranean, and even last year when the Israeli-Lebanon conflict erupted, this naval force was in operation in the Mediterranean, and they were seriously looking at sending them in to sit off the coast of Lebanon and act as kind of like a power force that just sits and simmers and waits to be called in. And the force, this naval force, has been made up of Canadian ships, American ships, ships from various European countries, and on a very significant note, last year one Russian vessel accompanied the NATO naval fleet, raising the NATO flag for the first time on a post-Soviet piece of military equipment. And that was really, really significant, because another angle to all of this is, how is Russia going to react? And so on one hand, you see them sending a ship to actually engage with NATO, and then on the other hand, you do see Russia stirring up the pot and saying that this expansion of NATO, and the expansion of the EU for that matter, is something that is detrimental.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Carl Thycrib, and we're talking about his attendance at these NATO meetings. And he's commenting that actually at these meetings they're talking about the NATO Navy. Now, I didn't even know they had a Navy, but of course they have ships that are assigned to NATO from other nations, America, Canada, Great Britain, some of the European countries. And this whole idea of an international force or a world army and now a world navy, because everything is to do with nationhood and sovereignty and freedom and bring it under the control of this international body. Would that be a fair assumption?
I think so. From what I gathered at these particular meetings, the idea is to show to the world that they can project force, that the international community can muscle their way through and be able to show force either symbolically or in actuality wherever they are called and wherever they are needed. Some of this actually fits part and parcel with a concept that came out of the Canadian government in the 1990s under Lloyd Axworthy, who I mentioned earlier in the program. And the concept is called R2P, Right to Protect. And it was brought up at the United Nations and is right now simmering and circling throughout the United Nations gatherings. And the right to protect essentially goes along these lines, that if a nation, a rogue state or a nation that is so-called failed, can't get its act together, then there will be an international component, an international military force, either through the United Nations or through NATO, or a combination of maybe the UN and an African Union force, some type of combination of multilateral forces, will go in and will end up taking control of that particular country's situation. A lot of it is in terms of human rights. If the country is flagrantly abusing human rights, well, this right to protect aspect would kick in, and NATO or the UN or some combination thereof would come in and wrestle control out of the hands of the government leaders, and they would go in and save the day. They would be the heroes.
Yeah, but what happens, of course, if we have this power being misused, because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And if we were to have civil unrest here in the United States, how would we feel about Nigerian troops? Or troops from Zimbabwe, or troops from Communist China, or Communist Vietnam, or Communist Korea coming in to reestablish order in the United States. I mean, this is what people never think of.
Well,
they
sure.
don't understand where this can possibly lead to.
Well, exactly. And the flip side of that is, right now, around the world, how are people feeling, and just the regular Joe on the street, of having American troops in their nation?
Well, I think some people are willing to give their lives to drive the Americans out, because they say they're occupying our country, and the Muslim belief, and our leaders know that, is a belief that's been around for 1,400 years, or
yeah.
1,300 years anyway, that once a nation has been under Muslim rule, why, of course, every Muslim has a right to keep that, has an obligation to keep that, and if the Crusaders, the infidels, are on the holy land of the Muslim faith, that they have to go there and risk their lives to drive them out. So why are we occupying Iraq? We're certainly not there, you know, because we want to, fighting terrorism, because there was no terrorism there until we went there. We're certainly not there to get rid of Saddam Hussein. He's long since gone. Why don't we just pull out and leave it? They say, well, we pull out, there'll be chaos. Well, of course, we knew there were going to be chaos. That's why we destroyed the army, we destroyed the police force, we destroyed the civil service, why we just shut down all the factories till there were no jobs for anybody, no electricity and water. And then we pitted the Shia against the Sunnis, and wouldn't you expect that this age-old battle between the Shias and the Sunnis that had been around for 1,300 years would flare up? And if it didn't flare up, maybe we'd even have a few agent provocateurs going around killing a few people on either side. And whatever has caused the Civil War, we have a Civil War, and you can say whatever you want to. We have a Civil War there, and the President can deny it, and Mr. Gates, the new Secretary of Defense, can deny it. But the generals will tell you we have a Civil War. Lieutenant General William Odom, I've got a wonderful article he wrote, and he says we've got a Civil War. And he also says we cannot possibly win in Iraq. But, of course, you're not going to read that, you know, on the front pages of your local newspaper. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Carl Tykrib. I mean, what is going on today, people must understand, is simply a battle that nobody really understands. It has nothing to do with democracy. If we wanted democracy, well, why would we want democracy? America's not a democracy. Democracy always leads to tyranny. And that's exactly what's happening in Iraq today. Well, Carl, you go ahead and pick the story up.
When we were discussing the whole issue of America being in Iraq, it brings to mind, I have various friends in the forces, U.S. forces, I'm sure you do as well, who are there on the ground. I feel sorry for them. I feel not even necessarily sorry for them. I want to support them as friends, and I want to support them as men and women who have to do a job. Many of them don't even agree with why they're there or don't even understand why they're there. Most of America doesn't understand why they're there. But it doesn't mean, though, that you are automatically anti-American. And I've heard this come from different conservative sources, which is really unfortunate, where if you are somehow against the foreign policy, you are automatically un-American. And that's not true. As a Canadian, I am against a lot of things I see happening within my Canadian system. I'm against what I see happening historically in Canada in terms of deeply embracing socialism. And I don't like some of the foreign policy actions that have occurred from my country. I have good friends who are in the Canadian military. I support them as friends. And they know that. And I tell them that. Well, we've had some great discussions. But at the same time, just because you do not necessarily agree with everything your country does, the whole attitude of my country, right or wrong, sorry, just because you don't agree with it doesn't make you automatically an enemy of it. In fact, in a so-called free country or free society, we should have room for debate and for argument and for countering viewpoints. And we should be able to throw those back and forth at each other without having to resort to rhetoric and all kinds of other garbage that goes with it. For myself, I'm a Canadian nationalist. I hope what I do, what I say, and how I act and behave will reflect what I hope my country will be, which is strong, prosperous, and free, just as I hope yourself as an American who has a nationalistic interest wants to see the American country be strong and free and moving forward. But we seem to have, when you talk about agent provocateurs, we seem to have agent provocateurs within the realm of academics and all other sorts of arenas where we have words that are twisted and meanings that are automatically twisted. Nobody can even give you a definition of what is left or what is right. Nobody can give you a definition of democracy. Nobody understands socialism or even capitalism for that matter. I even asked a gentleman not that long ago, can you give me a definition difference between a deficit and a debt? No, impossible.
Hold that stuff right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carl Tykrib, who's really one of the most insightful writers out there, and you'll see his articles appearing in an August Review and sometimes in Gary Cause publications. But right now, let's go ahead and give you an opportunity to get your webpage out and help people can get some of the material that you're working on and some of the things you've written.
Right now, we're in the process of actually developing a complete new webpage, a portal of sorts. And it's called Forcing Change. And we're looking at setting up a web-based system where we're going to have monthly publications. There will be not just a newsletter. It's going to be more like a research and Analysis Journal on the global change. And so our webpage, it'll be coming online in about 2 to 3 weeks. It's going to be forcingchange.org, forcingchange.org. And we're going to be having, besides a monthly analysis journal, we're going to be having downloadable e-books, such as The Power Puzzle, which is a large compilation of documents, source documents on global governance. We want to be able to have audios, and we're going to be putting up, and I like this, we're going to be putting up a large selection of first source documents that I'll be scanning and throwing on as PDFs. Some of it is open source and is obtainable at different locations. Other stuff is very difficult to find, and some of it is just outright rare. Right now, we just finished our first issue. We're setting it up to get on the web here in the next couple of weeks. And just an example of one of the rare documents that we'll be posting, we did an article on a 1913 plan. It was a blueprint, a proposal to create a world capital, all focused on the idea of a global parliament, a synthesis of religions, a synthesis of economic ideas and politics. And in essence, it was to be a global super city. And this was circulated in 1913. Only 500 copies of the actual blueprints and publication was circulated, and it was circulated to world leaders. I found a copy, an old tattered copy, in a state archive years ago, recognized the immense historical value, ended up retrieving a copy for myself, photocopied the whole thing. There's no copyright on it, and we'll be looking at putting that up on the web, along with a host of other very interesting, very provocative documents. Some of it, folks are going to have to really do some serious reading because, well, I want to make sure that people understand thoroughly what is going on. We unfortunately live in a world where people don't like to actually think, but our website will, where if you're not interested in thinking, if you're not interested in serious analysis and serious thought, don't come. But if you are, if that's the kind of thing that drives you, wow, we'll have some very, very interesting material for members. And again, like I said, Dr. Monteith, probably in about 2 to 3 weeks, this website, forcingchange.org, will be up.
All right, fine. Well, for our listeners out there, you have an obligation to find out what's going on. You have an obligation to find out if what Carl is saying is right, if what I'm saying is right. Because if what we're saying is right, then you have no future, and your children have no future unless... Unless, of course, we can rekindle that spark of patriotism, this belief in freedom that at one time was the hallmark of both the United States and of Canada. Because we're really sister nations in some respects. It's a shame we're not one nation, but let's not try to change anything right now. We certainly don't want all of the socialism they have in Canada down here. We have enough socialism of our own. But right now, you have to understand that if you read Carl's articles, and I've always admired them, because he has a very clear view, not only of what's happening historically and politically, but what's happening spiritually. And this is really the common denominator behind everything, because what really drives this whole movement towards the New World Order and the New World Religion is these beings from another dimension. There really is another dimension out there. There really are demonic forces at work in our world that are actually motivating and leading and controlling many of our key leaders of the world in finance and in government and the military. And anybody who hasn't read my material on the occult hierarchy, you need to get it, because it's based not on what I say, but what the other side says. And people on the other side are quite open in the fact that they dominate the world today. And these are people, of course, who are in contact with the beings from the other dimension. And I'm sure you've gotten into these phrases and these terms in your research, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I have a very large library of source occult material, and material from a variety of different religious thoughts and backgrounds. And some of it is extremely open in terms of where their power comes from, what their goals are, what they truly think and believe. And a lot of folks will just want to dismiss this because it's somehow either paranoia or you just simply can't be serious. And yet, this is the philosophies, these are the thoughts, this is the spiritual aspect that really fires people up in terms of propelling forward the idea of global unification, the idea of blending the spiritual aspects together. You could almost say, in a sense, blending the gods. In fact, Dr. Monteith, earlier on in our interview, I told you that I was at a UN Human Rights Commission a meeting, and it was here in Winnipeg. One of the commentators that was at this event, and it was a high-ranking ambassador, made the statement, and I thought it was a very provocative statement, that we have a brand new international secular religion, and that new international secular religion is global human rights. In other words, it's elevating mankind, and mankind becomes the secular religion of a new global order. And I thought to myself, wow, that's incredible. What a thing to say. Nobody really seemed to catch it, but as he said it, it was certainly with conviction. He just wasn't fluffing this off and throwing this out as an idea. No, he believed human rights was going to be the new international secular religion. And of course, if you have a new secular religion, you're going to have the text, the sacred texts of that religion. And what are they? Well, they're the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and all the other appendices that go with it, and all the other sub-treaties, etc., etc. You're going to have the temples of human rights. You're going to see that in New York City. You're going to see that in Geneva. You're going to see that in different locations around the world, as cities are going to be declaring themselves human rights cities. And that was discussed at this particular conference. And then you're going to have, of course, the priests of the new religion. And in this situation, the priests of the new religion will be the global elite who can say, you know, NATO, UN, military, whoever, there's human rights being violated over here, and there's human rights being violated over there. And in the course of the case of the UN Human Rights Council, they've only picked on one nation so far, of all the nations of the world, and that's Israel, with a number of very, very harsh texts aimed at Israel's human rights issues. And so we've got a form of a new secular global state-sanctioned, and by state I don't mean a country, I mean a government, centralized government system. We have a new type of religion, not just simply one that incorporates metaphysical thought like a typical religion would, but one that takes and elevates man to the status of declaring, in essence, we are making our new Eden, we're making our new utopian society. Anytime we do that, Dr. Monteith, we inevitably make a society, a utopian society that just, you could in essence say, destroys itself from within and becomes nothing more than a bloody utopian dream. And I've used that phrase many, many times, but history shows it to be correct. Over and over again, when man imposes his own will in the form of a state type of religion, be it the Soviet communist system or the Chinese communist system or the Nazi ideology of the 1930s Germany, you inevitably have a horrendous, horrendous act perpetrated against the average person. And that is really the serious side of it. That's the blood side of it that comes out. And we have a whole history full of men seeking to impose their will on other men. And this situation, describing it in a sense that they are a new secular religion. That just kind of blew my mind. Then later on in the conference, Bill Pace, the executive director of the World Federalist Society, or pardon me, the World Federalist Movement, started to discuss man's damage to the planet. And he was discussing this in terms that man was a cancer. Humanity was a cancer to the planet. And what do you do with a cancer? Well, you surgically remove it. You get rid of it. You somehow radiate it, chemo it, do something. And, of course, he wasn't talking in those terms, but that's exactly the implication. He was discussing that the idea that man was a cancer on the earth. I thought to myself, you know, people just don't get it. We just haven't woken up. We haven't learned from history. We're only repeating it in bigger, more grand ways. And, of course, whenever we do that, we typically blow it in a much more dramatic and drastic way than the times before. So, you know, there's some real interesting things that have been happening.
Well, I think, of course, people have to really realize that there are people who look upon man as a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
There really are people who want to kill off hundreds of millions, in fact, billions of people. And we, of course, we cover that in my Population Control Agenda monograph, my talk on planned population reduction or population control, or certainly much that's available through our ministry. But, of course, war is such is not the most efficient means. Probably the massive black plagues that will sweep the world with uncontrollable disease and bring uncontrolled suffering is a very efficient means of doing it. Bertrand Russell actually suggested that in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, published back in 1953, where he talked about how war really wasn't as efficient, you know, as we'd hoped to bring about population control, but if we could just have a black plague sweep the world once every a generation, then people could have as many children as we wanted, and it really wouldn't matter. It wouldn't impact on society, and it'd be there wouldn't be enough people ready to create a problem. We could have he didn't use the word sustainability, but that's really what it's all about. But of course, wars in 1953. We're not as devastating as the wars, of course, that I believe lies ahead. I have no question in my mind that they're planning a war, a massive war in the Middle East. And if you read the occult literature, they will tell you how all the old religions, Judaism, Christianity, the Muslims, will just fight one another and destroy one another. I mean, they brag about it in their writings. And I believe this is what's coming. And the average individual said, oh, that couldn't happen. Well, nothing that bad, and yet with nuclear weapons we can kill literally billions of people. And of course, if God is just, is he going to intervene? We've got Mike on the line. Mike, did you have a quick question or comment here?
A quick comment regarding the way that Christianity is signing on to the New World Order spirituality by way of the Declaration of Human Rights. If you go online and search Lausanne Covenant, that's Lausanne, Switzerland, Lausanne, Lausanne Covenant. It includes, basically a very wonderful and lengthy statement of faith that any church would be proud of, except that it includes the Declaration of Human Rights of the United Nations.
And of course, really all of our major ministries have signed on to the Lausanne Covenant.
Well, Mission America is one, and all this stems out of the Billy Graham effort, I think from 1972, to establish this Lausanne Convention.
Well, I think I hope our listeners will go up on the Internet and pull down the Lausanne Convention, and Mike's absolutely right. It says, you know, all these wonderful things to push the Christian faith and encourage the Christian faith and evangelize, and, of course, and we agree with this, and the United Nations Convention on Human Rights. Well, the United Nations Convention on Human Rights is anti-Christian, so why would all of our Christian leaders sign on to that? I dare say most of them have no idea even what they've agreed to. But then, of course, it's so easy to use the Christian. Mike, thank you so much. Are you acquainted at all with that Lausanne Convention, Carl?
Yes, actually, a number of years ago, I took a look at it because a particular ministry that I was interacting with, I wasn't part of it, but we were talking, had said, well, if you want to become a part of us, you need to read this particular document and then sign on. And after reading it and recognizing this part of the text that discussed the idea that we're supporting of the human rights and the UN Declaration of Human Rights, I thought to myself, no, you're extremely naive, or you're just simply being used, but you sure don't understand what's going on here. And, you know, there are legitimate human rights issues around the world. I'm not saying there's not. There are lots. And that's the sad part, because as there are legitimate human rights issues out there, here we take and we attach all kinds of other nonsense, such as global citizenship, such as creating a new religion around the idea of human rights. We just fill it with all kinds of this global governance, wishy-washy utopianism. In essence, that's what it becomes. The sad part is people put their hearts and souls and minds into it. And Christians, we don't. It's not that we should, not that we should support this, but we don't put our hearts, minds, and souls into understanding it so that we can stand up and be firm and know what we believe, why we believe, and then how to be the salt and the light in our world and our community when this kind of stuff comes into play. We wouldn't be gullible. Unfortunately, it seems that Christians are sheep, and sheep in the wrong way. I know the Bible speaks of being sheep, but there's a certain kind of a sheep that seems to get fleeced and slaughtered over and over again, and it seems that we within the Christian world, we want to be that kind of a sheep, it seems, where we seriously do not think about history. We seriously do not think about philosophy, about religion. We don't think about politics. We just don't think. And therefore, we set ourselves up like sheep going down the slaughter, the slaughter ramp, waiting to get fleeced and then packaged.
And of course, the thing is, if you wanted to destroy Christianity, would you attack it from without?
No.
Or would, of course, you infiltrate it from within? And would you get all the good ministers and the good ministries to go along with your effort to improve human rights by, of course, agreeing to the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights? Have you read it? Do you understand what they're talking about? They're talking about a godless system. And believe me, you can't have a God-based system and a godless-based system together. We are never, of course, to yoke ourselves unequally. Well, Mike, thank you so very much. I really appreciate you bringing that fact up. And bye-bye. And we'll be back in just a moment. Our guest has been Carl Tyqueeb, ForcingChange.org. ForcingChange.org. Well, Carl, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
3 minutes? Wow. There's not a lot that can be said in 3 minutes outside of the fact that I want to reemphasize just the importance of Christians and even non-Christians, just anybody who seriously wants to think about what is happening on our globe. I just want to reemphasize the fact that we need to wake up. It's not just simply a matter of coming out of a dream. No, this is going to require diligent study, diligent focus, and some real reflective thought. We seem to have lost the ability to think critically, for Christians to think biblically. And in so doing, we are nothing more than just simply gullible sheep waiting to be slaughtered. And that's the real sad part of it, because there are some great people out there. There are some great ministers out there. There's wonderful folks who just live day to day without really thinking about what is happening, intentionally used or used by either design, consent, or just complicity, and yet they just don't see how history is repeating itself in a much larger, much more potent way. So, yeah, where is the future? Well, it's certainly not very bright if you put the future in man's terms. Well, because we simply don't have a very good track record, do we, Dr. Martin?
We sure don't. All throughout history, why man has been tried and failed. Only on rare occasions has they risen to the occasion, and only then when there's been a great revival, as there was in America in the 1730s, and as there was, of course, again in the 1830s.
That's very true. We have taken our focus off of the one true God. We have taken our focus off of Jesus Christ as Christians. We have done what we should not have done, and that is simply that we have replaced the fear of God with the fear of man, and we no longer fear God, because somehow we've arrived. And whenever society gets to that point, whenever a Christian society or society predominated supposedly by Christians gets to the point where the fear of God simply lacks and doesn't exist, and all we really fear is man, Now we've entered into a very difficult period of time, and that's how it goes.
Well, of course, when you don't have a fear of God, why, you certainly are going to have a fear of man, because when God is removed from society, then, of course, you've laid yourself open for a terrible, terrible tyranny. Well, our guest has been Carl Tykrieb, and thank you very much, Carl. We'll always look forward to having you on. Anytime you have something to talk about, just let me know.
Well, I appreciate the offer, Dr. Monteith.
Bye-bye, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Carl. And, of course, it was wide-ranging, but he's one of the great thinkers of our time, and we're lucky to have had him. Now, let me just mention some of our new four-tape sets. One, The Changing Church, Globalism and the Secret Threat, The Impending Police State, Medical Myths, What You Need to Know, The North American Community, The Demise of National Sovereignty, and The Truth About the Holocaust. Let me repeat those new four tape sets. The Changing Church, Globalism, The Secret Threat, The Impending Police State, Medical Myths and What You Need to Know, The North American Community, The Demise of National Sovereignty, The Truth About the Holocaust, and we've got three great new four-tape sets. One is of the Constance Cumby, one is on iodine, and of course, a lot of our tape sets are now coming not only in tape sets, but in CDs, four CD sets. We're switching over so you can get either one. And then, of course, we have the Wisdom of Russell Blaylock for 2006, and we'll be having 2007, and we'll be putting together four tapes since the information from Bill Sardi, all of this information you need to know for your health, but, of course, the other information you need to understand for the health of our nation and for the survival of our nation, because America is under attack today. There are people of great wealth and power working at the highest levels of our government, who hate America, who hate freedom, who embrace this idea of globalism, and they want to destroy this nation. And do you know any better way to destroy this nation than a series of senseless wars? Do you know any better way to destroy this nation than to destroy our currency and the stability of our economic system? Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than to intentionally ship the major manufacturing and jobs out of this nation and to transfer our technology to nations that we will soon be fighting and our boys will soon be fighting and dying in conflict with? That's exactly what's happening now. It's like it was back in 1938 when we were doing everything we could to build up the German Wehrmacht and the Japanese in preparation for World War II, financing the Nazis and financing the Japanese. But you see, the American people are never to understand that. If you haven't yet read the book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, you really need to get it. You need to get my talk on Iraq, The Untold Story, because it gets into the background of course, the Second World War, and how we were building up Adolf Hitler, and it even has a copy of a letter that was written from the American ambassador to Germany to Colonel House in 1936, asking, where were American corporations building up the German war machine? Nobody here wants a war, and yet we're building up 100 American corporations, building up the war machine, and there's no profit to be made. Do the stockholders back home know that we're building up Germany and the war-making potential when there's no profit to be made? And, of course, poor old Ambassador Dodd didn't understand. That's what you do. You create the best enemies money could buy. You need to get my interview with Professor Sutton before he passed away, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. You need to get his book, which we do carry, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. You want to corroborate this by Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And I'm sure one reason why it was suppressed was because it did tell you the truth about what was going on. And of course, the last thing they want is for the American people to understand how the United States and our good allies in Great Britain, part of this secret society that Professor Quigley had researched, how they were encouraging Adolf Hitler at every turn. And they keep talking about appeasement. It wasn't appeasement. They were encouraging him. But when you understand that, so much of what's going on really makes sense. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. We hope many of you will join Radio Liberty and help us. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
News on the Information Radio Network, I'm John Russell. Alabama officials say at least 13 people have been killed, including 8 at a high school, after apparent tornadoes plowed across the state. Authorities in Enterprise say students are trapped under a collapsed roof after an apparent twister hit the school. However, a state emergency management spokeswoman says it's not known if all of the victims killed at the school were students or students and teachers. More than 40 people have been taken to the hospital in the community. In the meantime, a state lawmaker says 5 people have been killed in the rural community of Miller's Ferry after an apparent tornado hit mobile homes. The violent storms are part of the same system that earlier spawned a tornado that killed a 7-year-old Missouri girl. Some Georgia lawmakers want to toughen the requirements for police internet knocking.